9, 12, 10, 28, 2, 23.
This is Deep State Radio, coming to you direct from our super secret studio in the third sub-basement of the Ministry of Snark in Washington, D.C., and from other undisclosed locations across America and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm David Rothkopf, your host. And as you know, once a month we try to sit down with the smartest, wisest people we know with political insights. And that always brings us back to Tara McGowan and Simon Rosenberg. Hi, guys.
Hello, David.
Hi, David. Hi, Simon.
We figure throughout this campaign year, at least once a month, we should check in with you and get your perspectives on where we are. Of course, since the last time we spoke, Joe Biden and Donald Trump have effectively locked up their party's nomination. That seems to me to be big news worthy of commenting upon. But, Simon, you may want to kick things off talking about the vice presidential prospects of Aaron Rodgers of the New York Jets. On the RFK
Junior. I think if he had a choice between being a quarterback for the Jets or doing anything else, I think he'd probably be willing to do it.
Yeah, it's true. But, running for vice president is tough. And he could blow out his ACL again working with RFK, I'm sure. Let's pick it up, however, back with the other issue, which is, we knew it was going to be Trump and Biden. Now it's Trump and Biden. It's as astonishing as it is to some of us that somehow people, after everything we've been through, could settle on Trump again. They did. I think, Simon, this morning in one of your social media posts, you noted that since the State of the Union and since, of course, this effective decision via primaries of the candidates, Biden has led the last couple polls. We don't want to read too much into polls, right. But
let's read too much
but
into
let's,
polls.
But let's. Exactly.
We can't, it is what we all do, right? It's like check-ins talking about the weather. I think just taking a step back, we haven't been together in a few weeks. Remarkable State of the Union address. I'm sure you've covered it at length. We can't forget that. It really mattered in a moment of where we had to sort of see Joe Biden bring it. He brought it. And I think, effectively ended a lot of the chatter around his age. The other thing that ended the chatter around his age, for now anyway, was that, we now know that special counsel lied about Biden not remembering his son's birthday or death day, whatever it was. But look, I feel good. I mean, I often feel good. I often say that when I come on here, but I do because I think Joe Biden is a good president. The country's better off, and he showed himself to be a strong and capable leader last week. I do think the polling is sort of marginally better than it was a few weeks ago. A lot of the polls are bouncing around inside a margin of error, so it's basically a very close competitive election. Yeah, I mean, there is one of the polling averages had Biden going positive today for the first time in months. I'm still trying to figure out exactly how that happened. But, there have been six. I just checked this. There are six national polls taken in the last week where Biden's actually leading, right? So I think, look, we have a close competitive election. I would much rather be us than them in every way possible. And one of the things that we should talk about today, and Tara will have a lot of insight into this, is, and I don't think it's that well understood unless you've been in the game, but the turmoil that we're seeing inside the campaign apparatus on their side, right? The blowing up of the RNC, the fact that dozens of Republican Party officials have been indicted around the country, the hard dollar problems that they have, they're having a very hard time raising money, they're spending an inordinate amount of money. You're seeing the Biden campaign talk about this stuff a lot in their press releases, and it's because for those of us in the business, these are huge flashing red signs that the foundation of their house, the thing that's underneath their campaign, is an unprecedented disaster. And it's going to matter in this election, because the way to think about it is the party is like the foundation of the house. I mean, the campaign is built on top of that foundation, and theirs is rotten and it's corrupt and their party is splintering. And there are just, if you choose to look, you know, yes, there are warning signs for us. The warning signs for them are much more serious than the warning signs for us. And I think the media is beginning to get there, right? I think we're beginning to see them understand that this Republican thing is an unprecedented disaster. And it matters, because I think it's also going to really inhibit their ability to raise money. Who wants to go spend money on that? I think there's the marginal kind of $100,000, $50,000 donor is going to struggle to fund this kind of stuff on the Republican side.
So, Tara, that does not sound like a ringing endorsement of how the Republicans are managing this. I'm getting from Simon that he may not think that Laura Trump is the right person to co-run the party with the guy who helped pick a candidate in North Carolina who said he's against women having the right to vote. But maybe you have a different point of view.
I think it's funny that he chose the one, you know, family member that hasn't been indicted to run the RNC, essentially, of his extended children.
Don't forget Tiffany.
I know.
Tiffany hasn't done anything wrong.
I and the internet forget sometimes.
David, I just want to say I really admire your constant defense of Tiffany. I think it's a sign of, you know, of the goodness of your heart that you are there defending her every time we come on.
That's me. I'm the man of the people.
I'm sure she is grateful somewhere that someone has not forgotten her, David. But also good for her for kind of staying out of the direct line of fire with this stuff. But I tend to agree with everything Simon says related to this. I think, you know, there's a lot to be hopeful for, and we need that. We need the hope and joy. We need the hopium that Simon always brings to the table. But we also really need to remain vigilant, because we know the polar coasters. We can talk about them every time, but every time they're going to be different. This is an election about vibes more than issues. It is about how people are feeling at any given moment. So riding the wave of an excellent, outstanding State of the Union, like something that I think we all needed, the country needed, but also reminding ourselves that a lot of people didn't see it. I mean, I had a conversation with someone at home in Rhode Island last week where they were bringing up Biden's age, a strong Democrat, bringing up Biden's age. And I was like, did you watch any of the State of the Union, knowing the answer already? And of course, the answer was no. And I was like, you really should just watch a few clips of it and come back to me and tell me if you still feel that way, because we're all susceptible to believing noise and, you know, it's air around us when it takes precedence. But it's just a reminder that, you know, one good day or moment or week is not enough to kind of carry us through. We have to be constantly reinforcing the clips, the moments, the content, the hope, and the need to stay with our eyes very clear-eyed about the stakes of this, because it's going to come down to how many people are engaged and do the work through the election season and show up. And we know that young people are going to matter more than ever before, and they are the least likely to have watched the State of the Union or to care about a speech of that kind of theater. And so I think it's just a matter of keeping focused on how we can keep lifting up the good moments, the opportunities, and not worry so much about the polls, because the work doesn't stop until we are through this election.
Oh, yeah, no question about that. I began with Simon by saying, you know, let's ignore the polls. Now let's talk about the polls. And I, having just heard Tara say, let's not overstate the State of the Union, I'd like to stay for a moment and overstate the influence of the State of the Union. and by that, I mean the following. I can think of very few incidents in my political life where one political figure in one moment effectively did themselves so much political benefit as Biden in that State of the Union. And even if, as Tara rightly suggests, there are a lot of people who didn't see it, at least within the community of journalists who actually cover the news, as opposed to those who work for Fox, but at least within the community of those that cover the news, Biden pretty much shot the he's too old argument right through the heart, didn't he, Simon?
Yeah. I also think he did something really important, too, which is that he started connecting the dots between the threat of MAGA domestically and the threat of Russia globally. I mean, that this idea that there isn't sort of a separate standalone movement called MAGA in the United States that's not connected to what's happening in Ukraine. And I've always felt, I think Joe Biden in my report card gets A's on virtually everything. The one area that I felt that I wish he would have done a better job.
Okay, well, let's turn the subject to Gaza.
Okay. No, I know. We're not going to get, I said okay. Almost everything. I didn't say everything, yeah, almost
okay,
everything.
Okay.
But I always wished that he would do a better or take a more aggressive stance on trying to level with the American people about the nature of the threat that we actually face in the United States and the attack on the global liberal order and, you know, what's happening in Russia and Iran and everything else. And I think the president, by starting the speech, by talking about the FDR's Four Freedoms speech, I mean, the State of the Union in January 1941, was a really powerful evolution of Biden's understanding of how he has to talk to the American people about this election and what's at stake. And I felt it was it was really welcome and important, because I feel like they have not wanted to connect the dots with the international, you know, threat that we face, and that in some ways we were underselling the nature of the threat that's in front of us, which I felt is very important for us to be able to have the kind of election we want to have, right? I think if the American people really understand that electing Trump means, in essence, global democracies all around the world start falling and the world that we helped invent after World War II goes away, that it would be an even more powerful mobilizing thing for the American people. So I love this speech in a lot of ways, but I also felt it was a significant evolution in Biden's understanding of how he has to talk to us about the moment that we're in, that has given me even more confidence that he and his team are deeply connected with where voters' heads are at. I mean, I think what's driving a lot of the energy in our coalition right now is this sense that if we lose this election, our democracy slips away and our freedoms slip away for all time. And also, you know, the loss of reproductive freedom. And, you know, not only did he hit all that very hard in the State of the Union, but we've also seen now, just in the last 24 hours, the Biden campaign produced a really powerful video with Christina Aguilera and Jill Biden, which they lean so hard, so aggressively, right, into this core foundational thing that is driving the Democratic coalition, that's going to push us to the upper end of what's possible. It's going to raise him the money that he needs. And I'm really proud of them. Because I think it's reflecting that they actually know where we are right now. And they're building a campaign to win this election at this moment, at this time. And it doesn't feel like 2022 or 2020, which is what we need for them to win. So I've been really pleased across the board over the last 10 days in what we've seen from this new Biden thing, which I think is coming out of the box really strong at the beginning of the general election.
Tara, as you know, as Simon knows, my job in these conversations is always to bring up the vice president where I can. And she today went to an abortion clinic. The first time anybody, a president or vice president, has ever done that. And, you know, I think it picks up on what both of you have said about this speech. And it sort of helps to crystallize it, which is Biden-Harris has made a commitment to bring it, to take the issue squarely on, to show threats for threats, not to couch it in the normal language of politics, and to call out the threats to freedoms as they are. I just, you know, would love to hear your views on that.
Yeah, I mean, just tying it back to the president at the State of the Union and the vice president's visit today, Americans, not just the base of us and those of us listening that, you know, are on Team Democracy and deep in this fight, but also a lot of people in this country who are exhausted and depressed and scared and concerned about the future of this country under someone like Trump again, we all really want and need to see and know that our leaders have our backs and are taking the fight directly to the source. And I really felt that way in the State of the Union. I don't just like Joe Biden and I'm okay with him. I think he's the most effective president we've ever had in my lifetime, without question. And I love the guy. And I think a lot of people got to see that part, that so many of us who have, you know, known him either personally or professionally, what have you, and politically for a while, know about him. He was able to not make light of the issues, but actually call out Republicans in a way that was both funny and respectful and very cutting. Like when he mentioned that, you know, he'd be happy to take back any of the Infrastructure Act money from their communities if they wanted to give that back, since they're all the Republicans who voted against it are out touting those investments to their voters, and able to kind of balance this level of strength and fight and be like, we're not letting you guys get away with this, with also like his personality, which is not one to be just, you know, a cutthroat fighter, but somebody who is fighting on behalf of the American people and also calling out their hypocrisy in a way that lands, I think, deep in their souls and consciousness, which I think is really powerful. And with the vice president today and her historic visit to an abortion clinic, tells us a lot of things. One, what Simon was remarking on, that gives all of us here today and listening a great deal and sense of relief and mission, is that the campaign has a strategy, and a really sound strategy, for how they are going to connect with the American people on the issues and the stakes and the risk to our rights and freedoms at this really, really tenuous moment in our politics. And that is what, by the vice president going to an abortion clinic, it also shows how far we have come on this issue that used to, frankly, be a wedge issue and something that Republicans had real strength and an offensive advantage on, especially with their base, but also with other voters, that now today it is, we can absolutely wrap our arms entirely around the fact that this is about women's lives and our ability to make our own decisions about our bodies and our lives, and that the vast majority of the American people are on the side of those rights and freedoms, and Trump and the Republican Party very explicitly and unapologetically are not. And so I think that this is a very good moment. It is one of those moments you look at and you're like, we're never going actually back to a place where Americans are going to be divided on this very core issue. That's really about human rights and choice and freedom. And so I think that it is historic, and it also demonstrates that this administration and this campaign is not shying away from really taking the fight to these folks that want to take away our rights.
You know, Simon, it's interesting because obviously everything that you guys say is true, and this issue of our freedoms resonates, and their willingness to take these things on resonates. But what is happening simultaneously on the Republican side is they're deciding to double down on their positions of the past few years, whether it's a national abortion ban, or, you know, more guns for everybody, or a new Muslim ban and shutting down the borders and deporting people. You know, it's interesting because Trump seems to think that these are sources of strength, which perhaps they are with the core, you know, tiki torch carrying part of his base, but you know, I suspect they are absolutely not with the vast majority of Americans. And it's like both sides are going to their corners at just the moment, essentially, when we put the primaries behind us, when typically they try to find ground in the middle. How do you reckon that?
Well, no, but I think that, as Tara said, the stuff that we're fighting for is a majority opinion. It's 50, 60, 70% of the country. We're actually, these are not base positions for us. I mean, this is a very important question, and I'm sure Tara is going to have a lot to say about this as well, because she's worked in a presidential campaign where you've got to figure out how to make sure you're making the base happy while you're also speaking to the folks that are not with you yet. It's the whole art of the game. As you pointed out, you know, we are focusing on issues that cross over into majority positions of 55, 60, 65% of the country, with a consciousness of the need to do that to grow our coalition and to win the election. The Republicans are operating under a completely different theory of the election. And it's because I think my simplest explanation for this is that there are two things going on here. One is their party has actually been taken over by extremism and extremists. I mean, these people are actually extremists. They are dismissive of data showing that this stuff is unpopular. They don't really care. And because they're driven by ideology and in ways that we don't really understand in a party that's been largely pragmatic for a very long time. And then the second thing is that I think Trump is really diminished. And I think that his impulsivity and his wildness and his sort of all the most awful parts of him, right, where he can't control himself and he's saying and doing things that are devastatingly that are devastating for him, like yesterday him admitting on air recorded that he's going to cut Social Security, or his coming out against the ACA, which was an impulsive huge error, right? Just classic traditional political mistake. He had no upside. There was no upside for him to come out for the ACA, to come out against the ACA. In 2018, when we won the House by 8.5 points, the central reason we had such a blowout election was because Trump tried to repeal the ACA. This thing already did enormous damage to them. And he went right back into it, right? There was no polling that showed that was a good idea. There was no, like, he just did it because he's diminished and impulsive and wild and crazy and descending into a greater, I think, into more and more madness. He's living in a place of madness more and more. Now, some will argue, well, that's because they know at the end of the day they're going to cheat and the Supreme Court's going to bail them out. I don't really believe any of that. I think that he's going deeper into Foxlandia, into Trump madness. He's getting further and further away from an electorate that already rejected this kind of politics in 2018, 2020, 2022, and 2023. And if they rejected this politics, and now he's coming with it even being more extreme, more dangerous, more threatening, more wild, right? What in the world are they doing? And to me, the explanation is this isn't a strategy, is that he is diminished and mad and making crazy mistakes that we're going to be able to exploit in a very traditional way. Donald Trump is making the kind of mistakes that candidates who lose elections make all the time. And he's doing them virtually every day. And it's another reason why I'm so confident about our ability to win this election, because he's giving us the most extraordinary weapons that a campaign have ever had to bludgeon him than any modern campaign has ever had. And we know that if we even had a third of what we had, it would be difficult for him to win. And so I think you are seeing the party in some ways is melting down right now in front of our eyes in ways that I think will become more apparent and more understood in the next few weeks.
This is normally the point of the podcast where I'll say, hey, we're going to move on to the members only portion of the podcast. But listening to you guys and being inspired by you guys, as I always am, I'm also inclined to reflect on the fact that a guy who was our partner in starting this, Bernard Schwartz, a longtime Democratic donor, passed away this week, the age of 98. He made it possible for us to start all this. He and I had a meeting scheduled for yesterday with senior people in the campaign to go and do what we can to help with the campaign. He was working on that right up till the very end. It meant everything to him. And we're trying to find some ways to do some things to honor his memory here, including some high-level events that you guys have attended in the past and others have attended with cabinet-level people that we'll name after him. But another thing that I want to do, which may seem like a small thing except to the tens of thousands of people who listen to us, is that on all these political discussions that we have going forward for the remainder of the year, because he's made it possible, we're not going to have a paywall anymore. I want to talk straight through, make sure everybody can hear everything that you say, and do it as a way of saying thank you to Bernard and all that he stood for. So that in mind, for the remainder of this year in these conversations, we'll make this available to everybody without a wall. Now, Tara, listening to Simon, one of the things strikes me, there's a group of Never Trumpers who raised $50 million and came out with a bunch of ads this week. that really sort of excoriated Trump. And we always on these conversations talk a little bit about the impact of new media, new technology, and so forth. I'm interested just listening to Simon. You know, Trump's not going to have any wiggle room to get away with anything. If there's a kind of cluster of activists out there who are moneyed and empowered and can drive home that message, and if the campaign doesn't pick up on it, somebody else is going to pick up on it, and they're going to bring it to social media. And so a political campaign, as never before in our history, has become a kind of a community undertaking. And that seems really powerful to me, and I'm just interested in your views.
It is really powerful. And I, you know, Simon is not wrong that the president is spiraling. And I think there's a lot of reasons for it. We also can't forget the conditions in which he's in right now, which is under an enormous amount of debt, 91 indictments. His campaign and political apparatus has been paying for his legal fees, and they are not raising what they are used to raising. This stuff is powerful. It's meaningful. I do want to lift up something that Simon said, though, that I want to make sure that we don't, we understand how tenuous and dangerous this is. And that is that I do believe that Trump believes, rightly or not, that he doesn't need to necessarily be on message or run the best campaign or be very strategic all the time, because the Supreme Court that he really made much more extreme when he was president will have his back. And I think that's something that we should talk about a little bit. But also, he benefited from interference by Russia. And Russia and China are already interfering in this election. And we have less regulation on social media platforms than we did over the past few years because they've rolled them back. And, you know, what we need actually is a blowout. I know Simon says this all the time, right? That we need to get to a much higher margin. This is a turnout election. They are counting on creating more wedges and division within our base rather than expanding their voting electorate, as well as nefarious efforts to ensure that he wins. I thought it was really powerful that the president actually did a little bit of pre-bunking recently and will continue to, I'm sure, about how he does not expect, nor should any of us, that Trump will accept the results of the election if Biden wins and wins handedly, and that he will be a sore loser as he has been in the past. And I think that's really important, and it's an important part of this puzzle. And that goes back to your question directly, David, which is, you know, how do we make sure that we really, really, really channel all of the energy of the folks that are engaged, that are paying attention, that are, you know, using both their fear and their anxiety and their hope and their ability to find light and joy in this work that is so, so important and so such a privilege to be able to do to keep a democracy in our lifetime, to make sure that like we get as many people involved and talking about this, because there is so much material that we have to work with. We have to be strategic about it. The campaign has to be strategic about it. But the flooding the zone strategy that is, you know, Steve Bannon's quote, if you will, that is our job. And if we keep that up, if we keep owning the narrative and just sort of the information climate and ecosystem through Election Day, I think that we actually really can have a landslide election for democracy for Biden and Harris. And I think that that's really, really important to put this MAGA movement and Trump away for good. At the very least, Trump away for good. But also this movement that he's created, because the party, the Republican Party, is melting down. And I think you're seeing a lot more people come to reckon with that, even though they're not acting upon that reckoning. And we just can't get too comfortable, and nor can anyone listening, because it's going to be hand-to-hand combat through this election, because we don't know what stunts they will pull, because they are not playing a fair game, nor have they necessarily in the past.
And they have shown no interest in coloring within the lines when it comes to truth or facts, right? So they'll say whatever it requires. And undoubtedly, Simon, you know, you made some points of mistakes that Trump made. I expect within, 24 hours to hear him say he never did that. It's just, that's the way this works. Maybe you want to respond to what Tara said.
No, I think what Tara said was great. And I do think that we have to remind ourselves every day that you only cheat and lie and bend the rules if you're losing and you're desperate, right? I mean, if you're winning, you don't need to do any of this stuff. The reason Trump tried to overturn the election is because he lost it. And we have to recognize that every time that they do these kinds of things, it's a manifestation of the desperation that is underneath the fact that the Republican Party, in their core, knows they're the minority party in America. They know America's slipping away from them. The Democratic Party has won 51% of the vote in the last four elections on average. We are the majority party in the United States in ways that we haven't been in, frankly, a long time. And I think they're operating every day as if they know that we're beating them and that they need to create a new set of rules in order to be able to have any chance of being competitive. The problem is that I think the Biden campaign, the problem for them is that, this is where Joe Biden's experience, right? This is his fourth presidential campaign on the ticket, right? Not many people have done that before in American history. His team is wildly experienced. They've seen it all. And we all know these guys' tricks, right? I mean, this is like a revival of a TV series that got canceled. We already know all the plot lines. We know where they're going to go. And I think the American people are also wiser, right? They've seen this stuff. They know that there's something deeply wrong with the Republican Party. And so I think what Tara said, I just want to echo that I think that this is going to be a brutal race. They have an information advantage over us. They are going to have the help of hostile foreign powers who have the ability to come into our politics by hacking and dumping and by all the other ways that the Russians and other governments intervene in democracies. This very asymmetrical way they have, because we don't have the ability to go and do the same thing in their countries because they're not democracies with free media, right? So it's a very asymmetrical way of engagement. And it means that at every moment, in every way, we have to be on offense and making our case as aggressively as possible through all of our networks and all of our organizations. And in order to, because it's much harder to flood the zone when we've already flooded it, right? And this is the key thing. The best way to deal with disinformation or misinformation is to be on offense and telling your story, which means that it's much harder for them to push you around or to break through. When I ran a countering disinformation operation at the TCCC in 2018, the first point that I made was, we have to be louder. We have to be on offense. And then you get to the defense, right? And so I think the Biden campaign, I also would love Tara's thoughts on this, given the role that she played in the digital operation for Obama in 2012, I'm really impressed with the Biden digital team. I think they're being super aggressive. They're producing, new types of media that are appropriate for the current media landscape, these 12, 15, 18 second, videos that play well on TikTok and Instagram. They're doing, I think, a really good job in helping Joe Biden translate Joe Biden himself into this new media, right? This little thing they did a couple of days ago where Biden watched a video on his phone of Trump saying crazy stuff and then Biden commented on it. And the whole video was 14 seconds, right? Maybe 16 seconds. I feel like they've been given a pretty wide berth to be very creative and they're actually executing on it really well. I would love your, given your role and explain to everybody what you did in 2012.
If you're tired of hearing ads, you can support the show by becoming a member. This week, listeners of the DSR Network shows can receive 25% off the membership price. In addition to an ad-free listening experience, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our shows via our private member feed, enhanced show notes for selected podcasts, an invitation to join the DSR Slack community, and early access to select podcasts. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and enter code DSRNetwork, one word, to receive 25% off. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code DSRNetwork. This offer is limited and will expire on Saturday, March 16th, so act now. And thank you very much for your support.
Yeah, I want to say one thing before you say this, which is that I wrote a whole column saying this is what they should do. And I'm sure they haven't read it, but it's going to allow me to take credit for this.
David, I think it's actually posted up on the wall in, yeah, in Wilmington. No, I'm willing to bet that there's a blown up version of it.
AWOL.
AWOL
in
the bathroom, right?
Yeah, exactly. There's an Exxon station in 1995. But I do want to hear Tara's comment. I did think, by the way, though, you said it's very rare for somebody to be on a national ticket four times. There's also good company in that, because we started out the country with Thomas Jefferson on the national ticket four times, right? 1792 and 96, and then in 1800 and 1804. Anyway, go on, Tara.
That's a great fact check, David. And I just want to give Simon credit for, you know, the campaign turning on after he really suggested they do that. So
we are responsible. This podcast. So what have you done for the campaign, Tara?
I take
no. Oh no, Tara! Tara's an ass kicker, David. Come on.
No, I know. Believe me, we both know that's why she's here. Yeah, yeah, go on.
No, I think Simon's final point was the exact right one, which I am so delighted and excited by, which is that the Biden campaign and especially the digital strategists and folks have been unleashed. That is the difference between a smart and culturally relevant campaign and one that is out of touch with the American people or audiences, and that is the ability to empower people to leverage humor, to take creative risks, to be able to really leverage culture and cultural moments and have authenticity. The fact that they have turned the age narrative on its head with Biden cracking jokes about it all the time, this is powerful. Humor is one of our greatest tools. And too often in our politics for way too long, it was seen as too risky, and now it is the advantage. And really, can anyone think of anything that has come out that has been funny on purpose from Trump or the right? It's very difficult to think through, right? Like Katie Britt was funny, but she wasn't trying to be.
ScarJo was funnier, right?
Yeah, and you know what? In these times, these very dark times in the world, and with authoritarian on the rise here and abroad, we need some levity. And levity is also very powerful. It is a part of hopium. It is a part of joy in this work. It gets us through this work. And it also cracks open people's perception or perspective on things that might feel shut down in a way that doesn't kind of push them back into their corners. It creates more of a permission structure to look at ourselves, look at the things that we believe or that we have believed that we've seen or not. And I just think that leaning into the ability to be creative and snarky and get the president to be his funny and affable self. Like, this is genuine, authentic, and very much in line with what works with engagement and attention online. So I very much applaud Rob Flaherty, was the head of digital at the White House and the last Biden campaign. He is now deputy campaign manager. I know he's playing a big role. I have some former colleagues who used to work for me at Acronym that are running the paid media team on the digital side of the campaign. They have a great team. They know what they're doing. They're operating with a great fearless strategy that is true to itself and true to the facts and the values of the most American people. And, you know, we just have to keep amplifying what they're putting out there and making sure that folks see it who you know, won't be following the campaign's channels directly, which is, you know, a lot of the voters we need.
So three very quick things before I go back to each of you for a look at another aspect of the campaign. One example of this that I saw in the past week, which I just thought was super impressive, was during the Robert Hur testimony. They were, and the guy who was responsible for it in the White House, Ian Sams, I guess his name, he was like pre-butting it, tweeting in live time on it, doing social media in real time. They were running, they were counter-programming this hearing from beginning to end in just an absolutely beautiful way. The second thing I would say is one of the reasons that I've long thought this is a good strategy is that in these little clips and in these social media moments, you see Biden at his best, which you may not see if he's like doing some formal event, right? And that's what we've seen here, because he's very quick-witted and he's He relates to people very well. You thought there was one of him talking to a kid who had a stutter. They, you know, and these things work very well. Finally, I can actually remember Trump trying to make a joke and use humor in the past few days. And that was at Mar-a-Lago while introducing Viktor Orban. He said, and, you know, Viktor Orban gets a lot done because what he says goes, you know. And he thought that was a great laugh line. You know, it was sort of a laugh line, based on, hey, this is a dictator. I love dictators. So it may not have gone over so well with the rest of the crowd, but that was literally him. He thought it was a joke. He actually sort of laughed at his own joke when he said it, and it shows what a tough situation they're in. In the last 5 minutes we've got, I want to talk about something else which seemed relevant to me, but I'm ignorant. So, Simon, you know, one of the things that Lara Trump has done and the others at the RNC as they take it over, they got rid of these community outreach things. But essentially, they're essentially saying, and they said, we want no one in the party who doesn't believe in Trump, is they're making it all about the guy at the top of the ticket. But there's, you know, a lot of races going on right now, everybody in the House, a third of the Senate. It's going to be really important to the outcome. And they are clearly planning to screw the down ticket people in order to lift up Trump. But this strikes me as a big opportunity for Democrats, not just to gain seats in those races, but because if we have a chorus who are all singing from the same hymnal, then we've got a better chance to get a better result nationally. And I just like the response of both of you to this.
You're exactly right. I mean, let's just acknowledge that Donald Trump and Laura Trump telling Haley voters they were not welcome in the Republican Party may be the single most idiotic thing a campaign has done in the last 40 years in American politics. Let's stipulate that if you want a sign of their idiocy and their lunacy and their madness, man, that is exhibit one. I'm sorry I didn't raise it earlier because, you know, they didn't win last time. They have to grow votes. What candidate in the modern history of politics is telling a big chunk of their coalition that they can get lost and go be with the other guy, right? And I think it's a sign, again, of just how absurd on some levels all this Trump stuff has become. And I do think that they are, you know, they are in the process of losing this election to us. Based on the cumulative impact of all the things that we've discussed today, and that this is the worst presidential campaign we've ever seen. This is the ugliest political party since the Democratic Party of the 1850s, right? You can go down all these, you know, lists of things. And I think that we're, on the other hand, right, we're raising tons of money. We're incredibly unified. Joe Biden had two primary challengers that, you know, melted into little puddles, you know, because they couldn't, you know, attack him. We've got the vice president is having a really, really good run right now. Looks like a much stronger and compelling figure in our politics. And we've got a good argument to make, right? I mean, all these things, the country is far better off today. I feel really good about where we are. I mean, look, this is going to be a brutal race and we've got a lot. We can't underestimate what they're going to do. But we also shouldn't give them power that they don't have. I mean, this is a really important part of the Democratic psyche, which is that let them earn their place. Let Robert Kennedy earn his position. We shouldn't be giving people power that they haven't earned on their own. And I will just say, using a euphemism, David, what we're seeing in the Republican Party right now, one of the evidence of this is the abandoning ship we're seeing out of the House Republicans. This is the biggest shit show that any of us have ever seen in our entire lives politically. And we shouldn't pretend that it is anything other than that.
Simon's being modest because when he started out as an intern in the Abraham Lincoln campaign in 1860, we did see a campaign where the Democrats actually split into two parties. So you had Stephen A. Douglas for one party and I think Breckinridge for the other party. And it enabled Lincoln to win with 40% of the vote.
Come on, just let's go with the biggest shit show we've ever seen. I mean, I think that was really good. But it may be the biggest shit show in our lifetime. How's that, Dave?
Well, I'll tell you, I'll definitely make it the title for this podcast, but which will be no surprise to our listeners. But it does lead me to ask you one last question, Tara, about the nuts and bolts of all of this. I started with a joke about RFK, you know, naming maybe Aaron Rodgers in a couple of weeks as his candidate, which, of course, if he does, it will have exactly the effect he wants, which is that people will find the story so intoxicating that they will actually treat it as though Aaron Rodgers were a real candidate for vice president, right? Whoever he does. It's, you know, it's, of course, complete bullshit because the guy is going to, you know, get 8% of the vote. But he is going to get 8% of the vote or 7% or 11%. And that's bad news. And meanwhile, this week, No Labels, those con artists who want to blow up democracy as well, you know, said, well, we're going to get together a little committee and we're going to pick a candidate. And then you've got, Cornel West and a couple of other nutcases out there. That worries me just because, even if this is the biggest shit show campaign in history on the part of Trump, if you carve out 10-15% of the vote in the middle, that tips things. That's exactly what happened. Lincoln didn't win because America came to its senses. Lincoln got 40% of the vote, of the popular vote. It was because it was divided. And I was just wondering what your reaction is.
No, that's exactly right. That's why we have to stay vigilant, because their strategy, to the degree that they have one on Trump's side, is to make sure that as few people vote for Joe Biden who won't vote for Trump, but will vote as possible. So a third party threat is a real threat. It's something that we saw in 2016 that made a difference in the outcome of that election with Jill Stein and others on the ticket. And RFK, talk about desperation, but desperation that's strategic. He knows that he needs to get attention. He also knows that the media is bored and fatigued with another Trump-Biden election and needs something to be able to make this sexier and more engaging for clicks and attention and exposure. And so RFK Jr. is clearly going to play right into that, despite the fact that he has nothing, no merits that he could earn himself, Simon, to your words, a place in this race. He doesn't need to, because he very clearly understands how low the bar is to get attention and engagement and the media on board to amplify his own disinformation. And the other challenge, beyond just the votes that it could pull, it's in advance of that, the energy and resources it will pull from us just getting everyone out, mobilizing, volunteering, making calls, et cetera, where we have to focus on this additional threat beyond Trump to make sure that it doesn't become enough of a percentage in the core battleground states that could really make the difference and hand more votes to Trump and away from Biden at the end of this. And so it is, in my opinion, it's worse than malpractice. Like, the fact that there are grifters and people who are entirely operating in their own self-interest that are doing this work that could really overthrow our democracy, and they're not seeing beyond their own egos or greed, it's really disheartening. And it's also just such an unbelievable foil to Joe Biden, who, whatever anyone could say about him, people would be very hard pressed to say that he stands for himself more than other people. And that is what Trump is, and that is what RFK Jr. is. And it's just really important that we make sure that contrast is very clear and that we reinforce it every single day.
You guys are great. By the way, we reflected how great you are by the fact that this is the second of our podcasts that Simon was actually on this week, because he was on with Greg Sargent on the Daily Blast,
which we do with the New Republic.
David. No, it's good. It's good. Look, I'm all for it. And people who want to get more of you guys, obviously, Simon has the Hopium Chronicles. You can follow that on Substack. And he does all sorts of cool meetings and gatherings and virtual gatherings and so forth there. And so you can keep getting this kind of stuff. And Tara, you know, provides more local media coverage than the New York Times, the Washington Post, and CNN added up through the Courier Newsroom Network, which is growing all the time. But I'm not exaggerating. You do provide more local coverage than they do, and that's
why the bar is low. But we did. We just hit 1 million email subscribers across the battleground states, which was a huge milestone for us, and we're growing faster than we ever have. But we also have a lot of national products and a podcast for folks listening who have or are younger millennials and Gen Z, Vibes Only. Again, cultural references in it. go over my head as an older millennial sometimes, but it's really fantastic and funny and puts this election into perspective for young folks who are new to this really, really consequential game around democracy.
Simon, don't we feel a lot of sympathy for aging older millennials? Oh, you poor guys.
You should, because we're going to be in this fight even longer.
So, you know, the line I use is that, David, we're not old. We're just formerly young. And maybe Tara's now actually part of that too.
Yeah, I'm no longer a youth voter.
Well, as I said, one of the reasons I loved Bernard Schwartz, who I met, is that he was the last person I know who referred to me regularly as kid. And that is now gone. So that is, although Tara promised she would call me kid from now on. So I'm grateful. I'd be grateful for that.
I'm grateful too, by the way, Tara, that you're going to call me kid. Thank you.
because he would gaggle. All right. Thank you, Simon. Thank you, Tara. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Come back for more of this. Not just every month, but we've got stuff each and every week. And, you know, one of the great things you know about the 17 or 18 podcasts we do each and every week is Simon could be on any of them. We should, you know, do that with Tara too. Until we talk to you again. Bye-bye.